I am Veronica Gold, co-founder and CEO of Polaris Insight Center and Polaris Training. I am as well a therapist and supervisor for MDMA-assisted therapy clinical trials. And you're listening to Professionally Psychedelics.
Hey there, listener, and welcome to the Professionally Psychedelics podcast. Today, I am absolutely delighted to be joined by Veronica Gold, co-founder and psychotherapist at Polaris Insight Center, innovators within the psychedelics therapy field. As a MAPS-trained clinician and someone who has reams of experience in psychotherapy, Veronica is the perfect person to discuss the therapeutic potential of expanded states of consciousness, with a particular focus on ketamine-assisted therapy and unlocking the potential of MDMA. With all this in mind, there's only one thing left to say. Veronica, welcome to the Professionally Psychedelics podcast.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here. Very excited about this conversation. Thank you for having me, Jonathan.
Veronica, it's a pleasure as always to speak with you. And as you know, our first and customary question on the pod is, what led you to plant medicines? What led you to psychedelics?
So I originally come from the Czech Republic. And so I grew up under the communist rule. I was a teenager when the regime changed. There was a big movement in bringing work with non-ordinary states of consciousness, and especially holotropic breathwork. So Stanislav Grof, a researcher with psychedelics for many years, one of the co-founders of transpersonal psychology and the founder of the holotropic breathwork, together with his late wife, Christina, came to the Czech Republic and were offering holotropic breathwork workshops and talked about their work with non-ordinary states. And so when I was 16, I went to a conference where I met him and then started to participate in holotropic breathwork workshops. And it led to my personal healing of personal and, you know, collective trauma growing up in the communism, then led to exploration of consciousness. And it was a really fascinating, beautiful to see the potential of the non-ordinary states in healing and transformation. And that then led to me becoming a psychotherapist, studying psychology, and then later moving to United States, continued my path as a psychotherapist. And so I had, you know, kind of these two lifelong passions. One was healing and psychotherapy. My focus was on healing of trauma, stress and trauma-related disorders, or, you know, I don't like to look from the kind of pathologizing view, but in the Western world, this is how we look at that. And on the other hand, working with non-ordinary states of consciousness. So it was then in 2016 when I started working with MAPS on the MDMA-assisted clinical trials, when I was able to bring these two passions together professionally.
There is so much there that I'd love to unpick and ask for a touch upon there, in particular the MAPS trials that you've been involved with, holotropic breathwork. But before we really get into the weeds of it all, you know, especially with a focus on ketamine-assisted and indeed broader psychedelic-assisted therapies, from your experience, what is the additional sort of extra benefits that can be unlocked through utilizing psychedelics in conjunction with therapy?
Yeah, I love that you ask this question, Jonathan. I think there are, you know, many answers. And, you know, I think one as well is a mystery that maybe we don't know, you know, that there is this kind of aspect of working in non-ordinary states of consciousness that we don't fully understand, even though we're trying to. And so we are looking, you know, at the neurobiochemical effects of these medicines on the brain, and that these different medicines work differently. You know, some of them might have antidepressant effects. Some of them are, you know, kind of modulating the activity in amygdala, the part of the brain that's responsible for the fight or flight response. And so people are able to look at their experiences without the activation they would normally feel. And that as well can allow for greater empathy and compassion for oneself and others. And, you know, so that most of these medicines kind of as well regulate the activity in what has been called a default mode network, so that other parts of the brain and kind of a non-usual ways of thinking are available for the clients. And what I think is a really important part is that, you know, it's something that, again, Stanislav Grof talked about, and that, you know, there are these layers of consciousness that we can access with the use of non-ordinary states. And that, you know, in traditionally in the Western psychology and psychiatry, we are looking at one's life really from their birth, sometimes maybe some perinatal experiences to the day to day, you know, what has happened in their life, what has been contributing to the challenges the person is struggling with. When we are looking at this cartography of the mind, how Stanislav Grof called it, is that he included these other types of experiences that we might have in the expanded state of consciousness. And so those are perinatal experiences, birth experiences. So he describes something called the birth perinatal matrices, these four stages of birth that correlated with different types of experiences. And then beyond that, that was a layer which is kind of introducing the what is called a transpersonal. And those are experiences, you know, collective experiences, mythological experiences, archetypal experiences, and experiences of unity and oneness. And so these, we can say, deeper or you know, transpersonal layers of consciousness are available to be accessed quite readily with the help of these medicines. And so when we are, you know, looking at the healing, we are as well kind of expanding where actually the challenges the person is struggling with are coming from, and that we have to include these other realms of consciousness, that there could be, you know, transgenerational traumatic events that we have ability to access through these states. So that is, you know, kind of a really big opportunity that we have for healing through these expanded states. You know, last but not least, there is something that shifts in kind of the time and you know, maybe time and space as we are working with these medicines, that, you know, we've heard many times that maybe, you know, one session with psilocybin or one session with MDMA might, you know, be equal to something what a person might have done in, you know, 6 months or 12 months or 2 years in psychotherapy, that suddenly they have access and able to shift much faster. And so there is this opportunity, which, you know, as well brings a challenge, because everything is sped up. So as well, the topics of transference and counter-transference, kind of these patterns that, you know, are in person's life and in kind of ways what they project or what they kind of repeat in their life, is much more available and faster. And so, you know, I think all these different things contribute to the potential benefit of working with these non-ordinary states. It's no one of them. It's combination of all these. And then there is that you know, ingredient of mystery that we actually don't exactly know.
And specifically looking at the work that you and your colleagues lead at Polaris Insight Center, where a lot of the clinic focuses on ketamine-assisted psychotherapy, I guess sort of practically speaking, how is ketamine then used in coordination with therapy within the sessions? And perhaps as an extension of that, when you're using ketamine alongside a psychotherapy, what would you say are the key, well, I guess, safety considerations that need to be undertaken with this type of therapy? What additional, I guess, safeguards and checks do you need to cover off to ensure that the therapy session is, yeah, safe for yourself, safe for the client, and is set up to succeed?
You know, I think about ketamine treatments that you know, Dr. Raquel Bennett described these paradigms when we have the medical paradigm, and I think that is what, you know, ketamine is most often used. So, you know, there are other uses of ketamine that are not for mental health. But when, you know, ketamine is used for mental health in the medical paradigm, the focus is on symptom reduction. And, you know, oftentimes people will come for multiple sessions. They might even work with a therapist after the sessions or before, and, you know, being engaged in therapy. And and the ketamine, you know, because it increases neuroplasticity, people might have more benefit of the therapeutic work they're doing kind of outside of these sessions when they're getting treatment with ketamine. But then when we look at the psychological or transpersonal paradigms, we, you know, in the psychological paradigm, we are looking for processing of the underlying material that's emerging in the sessions and helping the client to get lasting resolutions of these underlying issues that will then lead to symptom reduction. And then in the transpersonal paradigm, we are as well inviting these transpersonal experiences, as I described when I was talking about the cartography of the mind. And they that these experiences are seen as crucial for the healing and addressing the challenges the client is coming in with. And so it's very important to focus on, you know, the set and setting. And it's a term that has been kind of used and you know, maybe not sometimes just thought about in details, but it really is the preparation, you know, the mindset of the client and the therapist, and taking in consideration the mindset of, you know, the collective, the family, the community, the country or the state where the person is, and how that is impacting, you know, kind of their approach to the treatment. And the setting is, you know, how comfortable and safe we're creating it, the environment for the person to feel to able to go as deep as they can go. And, you know, that includes, for example, the time for the sessions. So, you know, I think we really need to consider that the more time we have in the session, the person will be able to go deeper. So at our clinic, the sessions are 3 hours long. And, you know, the active phase of ketamine might be, you know, anywhere, you know, and it depends on the person's metabolism, but could be, you know, from 45 to 90 minutes. But because we have this extended time, there is a time for kind of preparation and easing into the session. And then as well, time in the end of the session to start processing and talking about what came up and kind of coming back to safety. And so to, you know, kind of back and safety, what I mean, kind of that they're stable to leave, you know, the session. So for the safety considerations, you know, ketamine has great safety record. And, you know, there is, of course, extensive intake process with the prescriber and then with the psychotherapist, and that in combination, the psychotherapist and the prescriber together with the client decided this is the treatment that's the best for them. And we really want the client to fully consent to everything that the treatment, you know, might look like, what might come up, so that they have a good understanding. And that we give time for preparation so that we, you know, can support the patient and know that they have support kind of in the psychological safety. And, you know, and then there is a medical provider on site. And if the people are using intramuscular at other clinics, IV ketamine, in United States, it is not required to have a medical provider on site if their patient is using the lozenges that are compounded, you know, medication for them. And they're informed about the potential side effects of ketamine, so that they, you know, can be watching for those. And then there is the integration, the phases after the session when the therapist and the prescriber continue contact and you know, in our case, continue the treatment. So it's kind of a, you know, treatment of several ketamine journeys and integration sessions. So really, we haven't had any serious adverse events in treating any of our patients.
And you mentioned before that some patients might come for a course of psychedelic assisted therapy, but they might already be engaged in some talk therapies beforehand. They might already have a relationship with a talk therapist that they're already seeing. With regards to that integration piece, what kind of communications, if any, are there between sort of you guys at Polaris and the patients, I guess, external and additional therapists that they work with? Is it important to be sort of lined up, or can the two types of therapies, these two different, I guess, modalities, can they exist in tandem but separately, or does it really need to be integrated and fully joined up from the off?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think this is so important, and it is a beautiful opportunity for collaboration, you know, with the you know, what I say, the primary therapist of the patient. And they might have a psychotherapist, but they might as well have a psychiatrist outside of our clinic. And it is important that the primary therapist is on board, you know, with them getting this treatment. Because treatment with ketamine, as well as other psychedelics, so, you know, MDMA or psilocybin or, you know, other psychedelic-assisted therapy, we can look at as a disruptive process, or it's you know, there is this phase that, you know, we could say it's like a chaos or kind of going into, you know, more, it can be more challenging before it is better, because the clients might, you know, have not looked at some of these experiences in their life, or, you know, they're getting in touch with, you know, what we call kind of a disconnected or dissociated emotions, feelings, sensations, and memories. And of course, it takes time to metabolize, process, integrate these experiences. And so there can be time when they feel worse within that treatment. You know, one of the guiding principles is trusting the process and supporting the client where they are. And so not trying to kind of shut that process down. And so if somebody, you know, is maybe going through a period of grief or period of anger, that, you know, maybe they've never felt angry at the abuser they were abused by in their childhood, and suddenly these feelings are coming up. So it's a really important part of the treatment. And we want to support them to make space for these feelings, help them to be able to stay with them without shutting the process down. And, you know, that might be different than when somebody's coming to, you know, a therapist where they're saying, like, you know, I feel a lot of anger, and they'll be working on anger management techniques, or, you know, working with the grief in a certain way. And so here we are, you know, need to be aligned, and the primary therapist has to be in agreement that, you know, they want their the client to go through that. And then there is a collaboration between the ketamine therapist and the integration therapist. And so at Polaris, we, you know, sometimes the patient will have integration session with a primary therapist and a ketamine therapist, and the two of them, you know, talk, email, you know, exchange information. You know, some clients, they might need less of additional integration sessions. So, you know, in some way, there is kind of an ask of the primary therapist to be open to that. But, you know, what it helps is that, you know, we believe that the ketamine treatment or other psychedelic treatment is part of the journey the person is on. And oftentimes the psychotherapy is beyond those few sessions with psychedelic. And, you know, we could be as well the primary therapist, but definitely we wouldn't not be able to see as many patients. As well, you know, I think the primary therapist might feel threatened by the psychedelic therapist that they would be taking away their business. And so here we are really collaborating. We are not here to take anyone's patients, and supporting them, you know, with collaboration in the process.
Veronica, you might need to brace yourself now, because I fear that I might be just about to throw 5 or 6 questions at you at once. So I don't want to alarm you, and I guarantee you that they're all going to be somewhat connected, but I've just got so many things running around in my head that I'd love to ask you. But building on sort of what we've been speaking about here, I guess that the first aspect of my question is, what does training look like in the ketamine-assisted psychotherapy and psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy and therapy space? I know that, well, I'm reticent to use the phrase Wild West, which often gets used for any new nascent industry, be it cannabis medicines and cannabis, be it psychedelics or anything else that's sort of sparking up. But something that there is clear is that there is, well, as things stand, there is no sort of homogenous standards, training models across the board, across different states in the US, across borders, across countries. You know, you see a lot of different online training courses, in-person training courses. What does good look like when it comes down to training? What type of ethical considerations should be not just discussed, but learnt about and gone into in depth within this type of training? And who do you think is, what sort of aspect or profile of person or professional do you think is best suited to be working with ketamine and other substances that can elicit this psychedelic type state. What type of people do you think are best suited to be working with these medicines, and what type of people perhaps not? I guess that last question is sort of influenced by looking at Oregon. It looks to, at least for that area, that the barriers to entry to entering as a psychedelic-assisted therapist are probably lower than maybe could be. It's all very different across a number of different places. So I'm gonna hand you that hot potato, and feel free to ask me about to remind you about any of the aspects of that question.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, please remind me whatever I forget. So there's like a different one thing is that there is this question. You know, is psychedelic assisted therapy should be only provided by licensed professionals, or are there other professions or paraprofessionals who have enough experience and training in being guides and sit for sessions? And, you know, I think that it again goes to training and competency and knowing, you know, what is in one's scope of practice. And if somebody is not a trained psychotherapist or somebody who has a therapy training, that they can recognize when they need to, you know, refer the person out, when they need additional help. And so, you know, that kind of goes to the question in Oregon and, you know, other discussions where people who are not trained psychotherapists are sitting for sessions. You know, I if we look at ketamine treatments, there are a lot of ketamine clinics where they have nobody sitting with the patient, and that, you know, they're just monitored from distance. If the patient, you know, exhibiting signs of distress or asking for help. And so, you know, I would imagine that maybe somebody who is not a licensed professional, but is trained in this approach and trained in counseling and knowing, you know, when to ask for additional support would be with someone going through the treatment, it might be more helpful than having them there alone. So that is kind of, you know, one angle to look at this topic. But the question of training is I think so important. And currently there are no credentialing boards, but there it has just been announced a credentialing board of psychedelic therapies in here in the US. And the hope is that, you know, by the end of the year, we'll have some standards that will help to bring some unification to the trainings and to the requirements, what is expected from a clinician who is providing or who is prescribing psychedelic assisted therapy. And, you know, that there will be maybe a reciprocity between different trainings, that there will be, you know, kind of like almost like a continuing education and requirements the therapist will need to meet. You know, and we've been thinking about this a lot at Polaris, and we have developed a training program that we've been offering for the last 3 years. And just recently, we have actually announced a certificate for ketamine-assisted practitioners that's offered by Polaris and Rainfall Medicine. You know, part of this idea was us thinking, what is needed for a person to feel really comfortable and you know, understanding the process, and as well as kind of seeing how they've been working with their patients. And so this program includes, you know, online training modules, which are live with questions and Q&A sessions. There is a self-study. There is a part of self-experience, which, you know, we see as very important to have an experience with non-ordinary state of consciousness. You know, ideally with the medicine the person is working with, but sometimes that is not possible. And so it can be with, you know, non-medicine ways of entering into the expanded states and working with another person in that state. It is observation of sessions. So it's, you know, either video sessions or it could be live sessions in the training. And then it's a practice sessions without medicine. So, you know, kind of when you think about therapy and ketamine and ketamine assisted psychotherapy, it is not that we'll take the therapy we are already doing and just add ketamine to it. We need to understand the effect of the medicine and almost like unlearn some of the ways we have been trained. And at times we will use these ways. So we are as well taking people through practicing this kind of sitting and guiding, you know, being with someone who is in an inner focus, wearing eye shades, music in the room, you know, not a typical therapy setting, in the part of the training. And then it's a consultation. So it's a combination of individual and group consultation. And what we suggest in our certificate is having 12 group and 12 individual consultations. And so in the group, it would be 24 hours because those are 2 hours long.
So are these like supervision sessions that traditional psychotherapists might have with their peers?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it's a like supervision. So individual and group. And then as well, having experience with multiple clients and a number of ketamine-assisted psychotherapy sessions. And so this process might take, you know, 1 to 2 years. And, you know, and then we suggest to people to continue with either the consultation supervision or peer consultation supervision. So that, you know, kind of going back to your question about ethics, and, you know, many of us heard about the different violations in the psychedelic-assisted therapy field. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not something that's new. There has been a lot of violations in you know, talk therapy field, you know, Western medicine. And then, you know, there is this higher risk in psychedelic space because everything is amplified. You know, some of these defenses and protective parts of the patients are decreased. And there is a greater porosity and suggestibility in that space. And so we really need to think about this vulnerability of non-ordinary states of consciousness. So that is, you know, as well part of when we're thinking about a certificate is a big focus and the continuing consultation.
And perhaps as an extension of the training question, but I guess in addition to training folks that are looking to become clinicians in this type of therapy or practitioners for psychedelic assisted therapy, further than that, what type of education and literature and other sort of educational initiatives are there for patients that might be potentially interested in this type of therapy, but maybe need a bit more information on it, maybe need some myths busted about ketamine and sort of this type of assisted therapy, but also sort of education for other therapists? My thinking here is that less for therapists who are looking to get involved in becoming a practitioner in this space, but perhaps more for, say, talk therapists that aren't looking to become psychedelic assisted therapists themselves, but may want to or perhaps may need to learn more about everything that happens within this type of therapy to, for example, assist existing patients of theirs that might be going in for, say, some ketamine-assisted therapy alongside their talk therapies, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, you know, great. I think it's really, you know, a topic that is so important for therapists to be learning about, because it's really, psychedelics are coming into the mainstream, and so clients will be asking about psychedelic-assisted therapy. Some will have good and some will, you know, might have challenging experiences, and you know, sometimes they will ask for the primary therapist to support them as they're going through, you know, as a, for example, the ketamine-assisted psychotherapy treatment. And you know, this is how our training program started. So in, you know, we didn't start a training program with the idea of having a training program. The idea was to help therapists who are not familiar with the work to support patients. And that was for the ketamine-assisted psychotherapy as well as the MDMA-assisted therapy clinical trials that you know, most of us at Polaris have been working with. So we were doing these seminars for these primary therapists. And, you know, I would say in our training, maybe the module one, which is the introduction to ketamine-assisted psychotherapy, you know, is like a summary of the treatments. And then there are many other, you know, talks that are introductory talks, you know, talking about the principles of the work, talking about what a treatment might look like. So those, you know, can be really helpful for therapists and psychedelic assisted therapists. I think if they don't have training in trauma-informed care, attachment approaches, and somatic approaches, that those are areas that it's always helpful to get more education, and especially if they're going to be working with people who are going through psychedelic treatments, because those are areas that we see to kind of coming to the forefront of the work. And so, you know, we can always be improving our skills by, you know, getting trainings or getting continuing education in these areas. For clients, it's you know, I think it's really important to research, you know, what is available. You know, maybe not the cost of the treatment being the only deciding factor, but really thinking about, you know, we think about a cost over time, and that when they work with somebody who is really putting the time, you know, and has the experience. And so I would say in psychedelic assisted therapy, that it is important that the practitioner is with them throughout the whole process. That, you know, it might look like that in the beginning, it's an additional cost, because, you know, some clinics might say, you know, you might just be alone, or you might have a therapist with you. And the client might decide not to have the therapist because of the cost benefit. I think that over, you know, 5 or 6 sessions, that this will become, you know, worth it for them to have had a therapist, because they might not need as many sessions after all, because they will be able to have support to resolve some of the underlying issues and maybe prevent some challenging situations that could come up if the therapist wasn't there with them.